Hi everyone, welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you so much for joining me on this week's episode. Today I'm going to be tackling the book The Game of Life and How to Play It by Florence Scovelshin. I've read this book a few times. I came to learn about this book some years ago, and I think it was when I was studying manifestation, but I feel like this book is way more than just the traditional now or accepted form of manifestation. There's so much in it. I love it. Encourage everybody to read it. And I think I've revisited the book a few times since then. I'm going to start this episode off by first giving you some background about the author, and then we'll go ahead and review what I think are some of the most important concepts in this book. Okay, so Florence Scovel, she was born in New Jersey in 1871, and she was trying to take a path as a female artist. She attended the Pennsylvania Academy of Fine Arts, and when she was there, she met her future husband, who was a painter named Everett Shin, and they were married in 1898. They moved to New York City, Greenwich Village, where they became a part of this school of American artists. The couple unfortunately divorced in 1912, so while she was pursuing her own career as an illustrator, she actually became a student of metaphysics, which led her to write her own books, such as The Game of Life and other great works, which I'll try to talk about a little bit here. She became a popular spiritual lecturer and a counselor. She died at home in Manhattan in October of 1940. She was a role model for many independent seekers, not only by how she lived out her principles of self-creation, but also by her own do-it-yourself ethic. When no publisher would accept her manuscript for The Game of Life, she published the book herself. It became one of the most popular works of metaphysics, I would say, of the past 100 years, and it remains widely read today. She published her next book, which is Your Word is Your Wand, which I also loved, and that was published in 1928. And then she published her final book, The Power of the Spoken Word, was published in 1944, 4 years after her death. She also, I believe, published another work called The Secret Door to Success, which I highly recommend as a companion manuscript to The Game of Life. However, I should tell you here that The Game of Life and How to Play It, as well as The Secret Door to Success, they use the Bible as its chief point of reference. Something that you should know today, I will be referencing scripture, because she references scripture throughout the manuscript, but I like her interpretation of it, and I hope you guys are open-minded enough to like it as well. So, the Bible has been a basic aspect of New Thought tradition. Florence and her contemporaries interpreted scripture as a psychological blueprint of individual development and personal excellence. The author influences some of the most powerful voices in the positive mind tradition, including Neville Goddard, whose work I love, and Norman Vincent Peale, both of whom used her phrases in their works. She was an influence on a number of spiritual thinkers of her own generation, including, of course, Louise Hay, who wrote You Can Heal Your Life. Florence developed, I guess you could call it, a technique of speaking the word, or at least placing faith in God's channels and announcing the arrival of that which is needed, as you will also see in The Game of Life. Okay, so let's kind of jump into this text. And again, for the record, it's The Game of Life and How to Play It. So she starts the book off by saying that life is a game. It's not a battle as most of us believe it to be. However, in order for us to play the game, one has to have the knowledge of spiritual law. And she does reference the Old and New Testament to explain what these laws are, and I'll explore some of these with you. So the first law is the law of giving and receiving, which she says, of course, I think most of us know that Jesus taught in the New Testament, but which I also say is taught in other spiritual texts across the globe. So let's dive into this law just a little bit more deeper. So she references the following message, I would say. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. We also know that. This means that whatever man sends out in word and action or deed, it will return to him. What he gives, he will receive. So this is super important for how we live our lives as a spiritual law, which makes us more mindful of our actions towards others, of course, even out of self-interest, but also mindful of the words that we use, knowing today and knowing in the game of life that it affects our experiences in general. She also references the power of the imagination while playing the game of life and references the following scripture to explain it further. Keep thy heart or imagination with all diligence, for out of it are the issues of life. This means that what man imagines sooner or later externalizes in his affairs. We have to be careful what we set our mind upon. So if you're constantly thinking about sickness, then sickness must come in some form or other. We have to spend some time training our minds to be successful at this game that we call life. She talks about something called the scissors of the mind, which she calls the imagination. And these scissors are ever cutting, day by day, the pictures we see. And again, one day you will meet the creations of your mind, or at least experience them. So just by I would say the beginning of this text alone, we see, and I'm sure most of you are like, oh, I've heard all of this before. I'm sure you have. Most modern day teachers, I would say, in metaphysics or in New Age spirituality, heavily pulled from Florence Scovelshin's work, especially this text in particular, where she goes through all of these spiritual laws to teach us about manifestation and that we are co-creators in our own right, and also about the power of the imagination itself. So it's important to understand how your mind works, but it's also important to know yourself. I think we also have heard in many esoteric philosophies and religions the phrase, know thyself, over and over and over. I think there's something very important about that we should be paying attention to. How do we do this? How do we begin to know thyself? And she's putting all this information out at the beginning of the text, these laws, and some of these other, lessons, a lot of this information that she thinks is crucial for us to understand how to live in this quote unquote strange world. Well, we need to understand what she calls the three departments of the mind to know ourselves. What are these three departments? We have the subconscious, the conscious, and the superconscious. The subconscious is simply power without direction. It is like steam or electricity, and it does what it is directed to do. It has no power of induction. Whatever you feel deeply or imagine clearly is impressed upon the subconscious mind and then carried out. The conscious mind has been called moral or the carnal mind. It is the human mind and sees life as it appears to be. So the conscious mind sees death, disaster, sickness, poverty and limitation of every kind, and it impresses the subconscious mind. And then you have the superconscious mind. And the superconscious mind is the mind of God within each person, and it is the realm of perfect ideas. I love the way she defines that. The superconscious is a place of divine designs for your life, something you are meant to do. That's the place where the information is. That is the blueprint, if you will. So these divine designs for your life, they flash from this part of the mind. And these flashes, these divine designs, sometimes I guess we could call those your life purpose, the ideas, they come from the superconscious. And these ideas, which usually seem unattainable or too good to be true, they come from the superconscious, the mind of God, the realm of infinite intelligence. In reality,
it is man's true destiny or destination that's being flashed to him from infinite intelligence, which is within yourself. And it comes from the super conscious. It's important to note that many people are ignorant of their true destinies and are stringing themselves along, looking for situations that don't necessarily belong to them, or situations that would only bring failure and dissatisfaction if they were attained. This is why it's super important for us to make time to tap into our super conscious to access the details of our true destiny. In the game of life, nothing stands between man and his highest ideals and every desire of his heart except for two things, doubt and fear. When man can wish without worrying, every desire will be instantly fulfilled. It's important to substitute fear with faith. In her own words, she says, fear is inverted faith. It is the faith in evil instead of good. Now, your subconscious mind is your faithful servant, but you have to give it the right orders. Every thought, every word is impressed upon, and it's then carried out in amazing details. Okay, so from there, she talks about this other law called the law of prosperity. Now, everything is building upon itself in this book, so we need to keep in mind everything we just talked about, the power of the imagination. We spoke about the law of giving and receiving, because all of this comes back throughout the entire book, I would say. And then we just talked about the power of the conscious mind, the subconscious, and the superconscious. So keep all of this in mind as we move forward through other laws and other little snippets that she kind of gives us throughout the entire book. So her next chapter is on the law of prosperity. She spends some time, even in the law of prosperity chapter, talking about the power of the spoken word. And there's a reason for this. But she does say at the outset, one of our powers here on earth is the power of speaking. Our word is our wand, per her own words. And this is our power by divine right. We must have faith in our spoken word. Words and thoughts are a tremendous vibratory force, ever molding man's bodies and affairs. She emphasized the needs of having perfect faith in the spoken word. It's a very special, I would say, ingredient, right? The faith itself. We have the power to change our conditions by changing our words, she says. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. You have to believe in what you're saying and have faith in it coming into being. And I think for most of us, we're like, this sounds like The Secret. It surely does. So, as an example, she says if one asks for success and prepares for failure, then they're going to get the situation that they put their most energy into and they prepared for. Do not plan for the worst outcome. You have to prepare for the thing that's asked for, even when there isn't the slightest sign of it in sight. Getting into the spiritual swing of things isn't really easy for the average person. The adverse thoughts of doubt and fear, they surge from the subconscious. The subconscious really contains everything that we have learned. Learned behavior is impressed upon the subconscious through time, you guys. So whenever you are in a situation, let's say, you've lost your job, the first thought comes from the subconscious because it has built up containing your beliefs about loss in any capacity. And that's our go-to mental plane, if you will. And that shapes our reactions and thus our beliefs and our experiences. Okay, just made a little side note there. But they do come from the subconscious mind, our thoughts of doubt and fear. They are what she calls the army of aliens, which must be put to rest. This explains why it's often darkest before the dawn. She says that a big demonstration is usually preceded by tormenting thoughts. And here she means by demonstration, and it's a word that she uses often in the book. A demonstration is the revelation of the manifestation, right? The thing that we've been trying to create forever. Okay. She adds that having made a statement of high spiritual truth, one challenges the old beliefs in the subconscious, and then the error is exposed to be put out. This is the time when one must make his affirmations of truth repeatedly and rejoice and give thanks that he has already received. So I don't want to jump the gun here, but what she is saying that it is often darkest before the dawn. Many times when we have failed in some aspect or another, something that we have really worked on, tried hard and hard again, applied for, etc., and we've just been down in the dumps, it is usually at that moment when we're ready to freaking give up is when we succeed. I don't understand why it works that way, but it kind of often does work that way. And you'll see this from many, if you read the biographies of very hugely successful entrepreneurs, they have very similar stories where there was a lot of failure first, and right when they were about to bounce is when the offer came in or success came out of the blue or etc. But what she is saying here, which I wasn't going to talk about until later, she's talking about this law of transmutation. And if you've read the Kybalion, I covered this some time ago. This law of transmutation is really being able to shift your energy, your vibration, and your thoughts into this very different state, into the mindset of positivity, right? And only seeing, what do we want to call it here? The outcome. And only like staying steady on what can be, what can manifest. Not telling you to be delusional. That's not what she's saying, but transmute the darkness into the light. This is important because when we are at that moment of walking away and at that moment of giving up and we are sitting in these tormenting thoughts, it's at that moment where we have to, as she says, make a statement of high spiritual truth that challenges the old beliefs that are in our subconscious mind so that we can put out those errors, those negative thoughts. And it is during this time where we have to make very strong positive affirmations of truth repeatedly to ourselves and give thanks that we have already received, essentially. Okay. We can only receive what we see ourselves receiving. This is, again, important, but this is also, I think we all know this, again, by studying manifestation. Every great work, every big accomplishment has been brought into manifestation through holding to a vision. And often just before the big achievements, you know, apparent failure, there's apparent discouragement, etc. This is just, like I said, very, very common. So if this speaks to you in any kind of way and you've been working on something and it looks like you've been failing nonstop, yes, there are times when there's a sign to stop and go in a different direction or make some changes, but also sometimes it's also a sign of hold fast, hold on, hold on. Okay. She does mention, though, throughout this process again, the one who knows spiritual law is undisturbed by appearance and rejoices while he is still in what she calls captivity, right? These tormenting thoughts. That is, he holds to his vision and gives thanks that the end is accomplished and that he has received. She uses an example of Jesus here. So in this example, Jesus says to his disciples, say not yet, there are yet 4 months, and then cometh the harvest. Behold, I say unto you, lift up your eyes and look on the fields, for they are ripe already to harvest. His clear vision pierces the world of matter, and he sees clearly the fourth dimensional world, things as they really are, perfect and complete in divine mind. So man must ever hold the vision of his journey's end and demand the manifestation of that which he has already received. It's interesting here again because she's referencing, and these are her words, she's referencing the fourth dimension here where everything is complete and perfect in divine mind, which I've never really studied personally the difference between the fourth and fifth dimension. I've had my own personal beliefs about it, but I think it's interesting to note here that there is just a very separate consciousness that exists in this other dimension, which is the dimension of perfection and completion. Okay, so The author also makes another point about the game of life, which I think is important to help us play it well and maybe play it with a little more ease. At times in our lives, things are so hard or even impossible. And sometimes we go through events, not by our own hands, but due to circumstances that are not in our own control. And it's virtually impossible to hold the vision of light, love, and even creation in our own minds. In this case, we need someone else to help hold the vision for us. If you remember the following piece of scripture said by Jesus in the Bible, "If two of you shall agree on earth as touching anything that they shall ask, it shall be done for them of my Father which is in heaven." It's very, very important scripture, one I've actually never forgotten. Side story, which I'll get into at the end. Anyway, sometimes we get close to our own affairs and become doubtful and fearful. We become close to our own vision and our own creations, if you will, and we do become very afraid. And I think we do become extremely doubtful, and we need that friend to see the success clearly for us, to hold the vision when we cannot hold it, when we have no faith. This is super important information here, something that I think people should jump on. So he's saying here, when two or more are gathered in my name, and I think this really just means when two or more are gathered harmoniously, then whatever it is that they create together, obviously there must be some caveats here, but whatever it is that they create together shall be brought forth here on earth. However, when he does say, let me find the scripture again, it should be done for them of my Father, which is in heaven. My own personal take is that whatever it is that you two are collaborating together, as long as one can hold the vision together, and whatever it is that is being brought forth is meant for the highest good of all involved, then it shall be brought forth with active faith. And I think that is true when you're trying to create anything. Okay, so now let's talk about the power of the spoken word. She has a little section on in the book. So a person knowing the power of the word becomes very careful of their conversations. He has only to watch the reaction of his words to know that they do not return void. Through his spoken word, man is continually making laws for himself. She reminds us that owing to the vibratory power of words, whatever man voices, he begins to attract. We've also learned this as well now. There is an old saying that man dares uses his words for three purposes: to heal, to bless, and to prosper, which I think we all don't necessarily always do. What man says of others will be said of him, and what he wishes for another, he's really just wishing for himself. And per her words, curses are like chickens. They come home to roost, which I do actually believe that. Okay. One other thing that she says, she has some bite-sized sections of it in the book, which I think are very much so worth reading. And clearly Louise Hay, when she wrote her book, You Can Heal Your Life, definitely took from her, because she has this entire section on how the spoken word can actually affect our own health. I think it warrants mentioning right now. So your body can be affected, it can be renewed, it can be transformed through the power, really, of the spoken word. And she says that metaphysicians know that all disease has a mental correspondence, and in order to heal the body, one must first heal the soul. And again, she defines the soul as the subconscious mind, which must be saved from wrong thinking, because again, your subconscious mind is the storehouse, right? It stores all your beliefs about things. And I think, as we all know, whatever you're taught growing up becomes your experience, then becomes solidified back in the subconscious mind, and then you believe it, and then you live it, and you believe it, and you live it actively. But all of that is kept up in the subconscious mind, and that is why it is so important to learn to retrain your subconscious mind. And that is why people say that enlightenment, the process of enlightenment, is the process of unlearning. because what you have learned is the laws of the limited laws of, I would say, the third dimension, as opposed to what we could call these unlimited spiritual laws, in my own words. Okay, so she goes on and she says, in the 23rd Psalm, we read, "He restoreth my soul." This means that the subconscious mind or soul must be restored with right ideas. And then the mystical marriage is the marriage of the soul and the spirit, or the subconscious and the superconscious mind. They have to be one. When the subconscious is flooded with the perfect ideas of the superconscious, God and man become one. As it says in the Bible, I and the Father are one. That is, he is one with the realm of perfect ideas. He is the man in God's likeness and image or imagination, and is given power and dominion over all created things, his mind and body and his affairs. Very important connection to hear that she makes. Let's move on now to the law of non-resistance that she has in the book. First thing she says is resistance is hell, and I think we all know that. It places man in a state of torment. So long as man resists a situation, he will have it with him. If he runs away from it, it will run after him. Instead of resisting a seemingly bad situation, agree that the adverse situation is good, be undisturbed by it, and then it will fall away of its own weight. Again, she brings in the law of transmutation here, which I think, again, is super important. If you haven't learned this, I highly recommend you go back to the either study alchemy or look at the Kybalion to understand this law a lot more. In other words, use the law of transmutation to transmute the darkness or the negativity into light or positivity by only seeing the good. Be unmoved by what is going on before you. She's not saying to completely dismiss it and become oblivious and ignorant. There's obviously, you know, trying times in life. There's obviously darkness for a reason. But know that the situation brings with it a lesson. And know that this obstacle in itself will reveal something to you. So don't completely dismiss it. But again, be unmoved. An inharmonious situation comes from some inharmony within man himself. Again, this is a common saying that you find in metaphysics. We see man's work is always with himself, meaning that your experiences are a product of your thinking and your actions. Here we have, again, the law of cause and effect. Life is a mirror, and we find only ourselves reflected in our associates. Very important. Something that I've heard many times and I've read, and I struggle to believe that 100%, but I do believe some of it. In this section, she also speaks about living in the past, which she says is a failure method and is a violation of spiritual law. She says that the robbers of time are the past and the future. Man should bless the past and forget it if it keeps him in bondage, and bless the future, knowing it has in store for him endless joys, but live fully in the now. She says, behold, now is the accepted time. Now is the day of what she calls salvation. It's very important. When we think of Eckhart Tolle's The Power of Now, I wonder, again, how many people referenced her work about how it is, how important it is to live in the moment and to not mentally reside in the past, because we don't want our past to dictate our present or even our future. All right, let's move on to another spiritual law, that she, you know, the law of karma, which we all kind of know, and then the law of forgiveness. She says that man receives only that which he gives. The game of life, she says, is a game of boomerangs. Man's thoughts, deeds, and words return to him sooner or later. This is the law of karma, and karma is a Sanskrit word for come back. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. We know this. You reap what you sow. She makes, there's something very interesting here that she says. She says, those who are high in consciousness have their karma returned more quickly. The more one knows, the more he is responsible for. And a person with the knowledge of spiritual law which he does not practice, suffers greatly in consequence. So we should think about that. I don't know if that's true completely, but maybe it is. So the more familiar you become with these laws, then the higher the expectation is of your actions. She states, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. However, very importantly here, she substitutes the word law for Lord. It's very interesting to me because I was watching a Super Soul Sunday with Oprah some time back, and I think she was interviewing Carolyn Meese, and she asked her at the end of the segment, as she always does to the guests, what is God? And I'm always interested to see how people define God. And I thought that her definition was spectacular, and I've used it definitely for myself since. And she said, God is law. And here, Florence Scovelshin says that it would be useful for us to replace the word Lord with the word law. It's useful when reviewing the Bible to replace, again, Lord with law. Many passages become clear when we do this. So for example, think of it like this. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the Lord, becomes vengeance is mine, I will repay, saith the law, which is what? The law of karma. Pretty cool stuff, huh? Freedom comes through knowledge of these spiritual laws, which is really the laws are the truth. The law obeys man when he obeys the law. For example, the law of electricity must be obeyed before it becomes man's servant. When handled ignorantly, it becomes man's deadly foe. This is true with the laws of the mind as well. They work against you and can work for you depending upon how you utilize them. And now I want to move to the law of forgiveness. As we are well aware, Christianity was supposedly founded upon the law of forgiveness. And it is through forgiveness that we are given a way to neutralize or rub out mistakes, as it is said that forgiveness redeems us from the curse of karmic law, which is in itself amazing, right? Gives us like a way out or get out of jail free card. Jesus the Christ came to bring us the gospel, and the word gospel actually means good news. And the good news is that there is a higher law than karma, which is the law of forgiveness that kind of breaks us out of that cycle, right? The law of forgiveness is also kind of known as this law of grace in a way. It is this law which frees us from the law of cause and effect, the law of consequence, if you will. I'm not sure how many of you have read any of Emmett Fox's work, but I remember reading one of his books, I think 3 years ago. I don't even remember the title. I'll have to find it for you. And there was one section on there that just surprised me because I guess I never looked at it this way, where he, you know, again, utilizes the Bible as a reference point for all metaphysics, as most of them did back then. And he says that, again, Christ came to bring the knowledge that the law of forgiveness conquers the law of karma. So this was widely known amongst these circles. So this is not new information, but it was new information for me when I read it. And maybe it's new information for you too, but it brings up a lot of questions for me, because does that mean that whatever we do under grace is completely erased? Does it mean that we can do whatever we want without any consequences? I'm not sure that I'm willing to go that far. But I do think that, yes, forgiveness in a way has the energy to neutralize certain situations. Maybe the transmutation will help in some way or another. Okay, moving on. In The Game of Life, she also talks about the power of the spoken word alongside the power of intuition, which is obviously a huge factor for us. She tells us that we can really accomplish anything as long as we know the power of our words and as long as we follow our intuitive leads. She says, speak the words and then don't do anything until you get a definite lead. The answer will come through intuition or a hunch or a remark from someone or even a book or something else. Intuition is a spiritual faculty and does not explain, but simply points the way. It is so much easier for a man to have fear than faith, but faith is an effort of the will. And the reason she says that in relation to intuition, it is because intuition is a fickle thing. When we ask spirit, help me, when we say, please give me that grand idea so that I can make money, when we feel lost and we ask the question, it can take time for that hunch to come through. But when it comes through, most of us have no faith to even believe it in itself. That information could be wildly unexpected. It could absolutely make no sense to the reasoning mind. You dismiss it as if it is erroneous. But she's saying, have faith. Trust the information that is coming. It doesn't have to explain itself to you. It's your job to trust it, even if it sounds kind of wild. This is important in the game of life, learning to trust your own intuition, to work with spirit, to work with the information that comes from the superconscious mind that does not in itself have to explain its reasoning, its logic to you. It is always 30 steps ahead. It sees all possible, moves on the chessboard. Our job is to simply have faith and follow. And she says that faith is an effort of the will. In the book, she gives many examples of how to go about demonstrating your act of faith, but these are very specific to each situation back in the day. I find them to be very helpful, and I think that it would be helpful for you to read them yourself so you can get an idea of what she means by demonstrating your act of faith. Okay. We covered a lot of information here. We covered a lot of the spiritual laws. I think that this book in particular not only teaches you, I think, practical laws to help you, I would say, maneuver life. Yes, maybe play the game of life strategically, but it also does kind of act as a manifestation manifesto in a way. It is clear that many modern teachers have read her work and they've utilized her methods, but there is one distinction here that I found towards the end of this book that I wanted to cover briefly, and I'm curious about your thoughts on it. And I have to read it to you because I can't really describe it. I believe it, and I question some of it here. Now, before I read this, I think you all know that when we are trying to manifest anything, and when any teacher is working with us on, oh, here's how you want to manifest $1 million or whatever, they tell you, okay, create your vision board, put it all on there, and then see it, and then believe it, and then it comes, right? Okay, that's the way they tell you. Now, she gives you something else. She says, I am asked so often the difference between visualizing and visioning. Visualizing is a mental process governed by the reasoning or conscious mind. Visioning is a spiritual process governed by intuition or the superconscious mind. The student should train his mind to receive these flashes of inspiration and work out the divine pictures through definite leads. When a man can say, I desire only that which God desires for me, his false desires fade from the consciousness, and a new set of blueprints is given him by the master architect, the God within. God's plan for each man transcends the limitation of the reasoning mind and is always the square of life, containing health, wealth, love, and perfect self-expression. Many a man is building for himself in imagination a bungalow when he should be building a palace. What do you guys think about that? So she differentiates between visualizing, which is what we do, right? It comes from the conscious mind. It's the things that we want. And visioning, which is a spiritual process, which is governed by the intuition, or again, the mind of God, the superconscious mind. And rather than putting up this vision board and putting all the things that we want on this vision board, she is essentially saying, hey, you need to tap into your intuition and sit down, meditate, and receive, be the receiver of the flashes of inspiration, these divine pictures that come to you, and then focus upon that, because God desires better for me, better than I can think, because he is the master architect. Kind of interesting there, right? It makes me wonder, do we all throw our vision boards away? Not today. Okay. One last thing I wanted to read here before I close out this book. And this is one of the last paragraphs in the book, so I wanted to read it to you. She says, "Man should make an art of thinking. The master thinker is an artist and is careful to paint only the divine designs upon the canvas of his mind. And he paints these pictures with masterly strokes of power and decision, having perfect faith that there is no power to mar their perfection and that they shall manifest in his life the ideal made real. All power is given man through right thinking to bring his heaven upon his earth. And this is the goal of the game of life." I really did my best to cover what I felt were really important points that she made in terms of being able to, again, navigate a lot of the challenges that we have here. I mean, we were cursed with three parts of the mind. We have the conscious, the subconscious, and the superconscious. I'm kidding about being cursed. But it is really tough when you grow up in very specific circumstances, right? You're a product of your environment to a certain degree, meaning that if you grew up in a very negative household, then when you become 30, 35, trying to flip the switch and train the mind to believe a completely new system of living and being is really tough. And I think that her book kind of helps you to maybe rethink how to go about it, but also to work within a specific framework of spiritual laws that helps to train you to, move forward in a new way. You guys, again, the book is called The Game of Life and How to Play It by Florence Gobelshin. I really hope that this has been helpful for you and not convoluted. And until next time, please have a great day. Bye.